This week we have an incredible marketing leader, Chris Hughes, who I had the pleasure of grilling about all things content strategy. Chris has been a senior content creator and content manager for 10 years, starting off by growing his own sports blog that evolved into a 15 million visitors a month network of websites. He's also been a director of content, specializing in driving traffic and generating inbound leads for a number of award-winning companies like ProjectManager.com and Quickstart Inc. And he's recently launched his own business aimed at helping solopreneurs and startup teams smash their first 120 days of content creation. In this episode, we go through the first 30, 60, and 120 days of content, from driving value from your very first post, how to conduct in-depth research to find gaps in your competitors' content, through to lead generation, Facebook ads, guest blogging, and distribution. I got super excited by this one. It's so clear and actionable. And I hope you enjoy it. Thank you. So welcome to the podcast.
Excited to be here. Really looking forward to the conversation.
Yes, me too. How long did you say that you'd been starting your own, you'd started your own thing from?
Yeah, I've been running it for about 9 months. Really made the decision just around the turn of the year and prior to COVID kicking in. Got lucky to land a couple of foundational contracts and had those as a backbone, and things have really taken off. Kind of ironically, given the virus here in the last few months, I've had the opportunity to pick up some new clients and get some good positive momentum rolling forward.
I may be good to hear your perspective, but this seems like a perfect time to double down on your digital strategy and write a lot of content.
Yeah, absolutely. I think content is even more important right now, ultimately, because I think some of the business operations that we would normally be undertaking, you know, as business owners are just different because of the virus. Things like field marketing or big networking events or big conferences just aren't happening. You know, the attention and the awareness that companies get from those types of events flat out isn't possible right now. And so I think a lot of people are turning back and doubling down on content as a way to build that awareness and then activate that awareness because of the way things have changed.
Definitely. So you're working mainly focused on solopreneurs or people like consultants, people starting up their own businesses. Is this something that you have to put a ton of investment behind or like a lot of time? And is it really worth it?
Yeah, I think what's been interesting with solopreneurs is a lot of people, because of the situation, had an idea that was backburnered. And, you know, maybe it was something they had been thinking about. And it was even maybe a side hustle. I'm working with a few people that had a side hustle idea that was there and they hadn't found the right time or just hadn't had the desire to actually run with it. And this was a trigger for those people and they decided to just go on and go forward with it. So I think it's been relatively easy to attract the attention of those people because of the mindset shift that's happening right now. You know, that could be different in a different environment. I mean, it kind of depends, but this is a unique situation. I really lean in heavily on LinkedIn, and I'm a big evangelist of the power of LinkedIn and what it can do for you if you create content consistently about your brand and about what you do. I do that on a daily basis. I point that content, you know, where I know those people are and, you know, kind of where they're gathering on LinkedIn, and really try to make it value packed and answer questions before they're asked. And a lot of times what I'm finding is that people are coming to me to learn more and how they can really take that to the next level and how we can work together to help them activate some of the strategies that I talk about.
What is your approach to LinkedIn? Is it to add value or show off a bit or tease what you could do or just to give away free content?
Yeah, sure. Everybody approaches this a little differently. I'm of the mindset to just be fully selfless. You know, I pretty much tell my story and where I've been and where I am now and weave in, you know, really actionable how-to type content and speak from my experience and just give things away. I don't really believe in, you know, kind of the hook, the bait and hook strategy that I know some people it works for, where you give away a little bit and then you want to gate the rest and into a coaching service or a product or something like that. Give the rest away. You know, my theory is if you're selfless and you show that you care and you want to help people improve, they'll naturally be interested to learn more and about how that relationship can deepen and be built working together. I just feel like it comes off a little unnatural. In my case, I would have a hard time like trying to hold information back because it's just not really my personality. It's not where I've seen success in the past. So I think that selflessness comes back and it pays off in the end. It takes some patience. I'm not going to lie, it's not instant gratification, but I think, you know, it comes back to you. So that's my viewpoint.
There's a lot of value of just being there and having brand awareness when people, and if you give away enough free value, it's not always the fact that people don't understand that is the problem. It's sometimes it's the time or having set the strategy, help them with that.
Sure. Yeah. And I think everybody's at different places in terms of how ready they are to commit to adding content into their mix, especially as a solopreneur. If they're wearing multiple hats, you know, they're CEO, they're CFO, they're CTO, they're doing it all, they're CMO, they're doing all the jobs. You know, how ready are they to commit? And I think that's where, you know, kind of taking that relationship to another level and talking through that strategy and how you can make it a part of your daily mix is, you know, where things really start to take off and kind of move from just providing that value to moving into an actual business relationship.
Definitely. So I think you did like mention quite a few different points at the beginning, but why should a solopreneur be doing this? Like, why should they be producing regular content, not necessarily on LinkedIn, or is it mainly LinkedIn you advise?
Yeah, it's a mixture of LinkedIn and then really whatever other mediums they're comfortable with. For some people, it might be podcasting or it could be video. It could be written content. You know, I really think leaning in on a couple of items, at least for a year, to see how that works for you and what kind of engagement that can provide for you is a good idea. For people that want to go the written route, I have a 120-day strategy that's been tried and tested and repeatable that works pretty well. So it kind of depends, you know, on the medium and what direction they want to go in and what they're comfortable with. But, you know, I really think it's about winning simplicity back, because if you build content strategy in a way where it becomes self-sustaining, then all of a sudden you're winning simplicity back in your business because you have that organic traffic engine that's working on your behalf. Having to hover over paid ads all the time and, you know, nickel and dime every Facebook ad and Google ad that you're trying to run. You're maybe not having to, you know, push as hard through other means of acquisition, you know, whatever those may be, because, you know, you're driving quality organic leads that should fit your demographic and your persona if the content's crafted correctly. And that wins back some simplicity there.
Yeah.
And the time that it takes to get the momentum built and kind of get the snowball rolling, but that pays off in the time that you win back, you know, once it is.
Yeah. How do you, when you start off with a new client, how do you get them started? What, I think we talked about this, like having 120 days and what those bits should look like. What should that first 30 days look like? How do you get someone, how do you onboard someone, get them
yeah,
the engine?
Sure. I think, you know, the biggest thing is to do the upfront research and kind of the dirty work of digging in on their behalf, getting those competitors, figuring out who direct competitors are and digging in and doing competitive analysis and content gap analysis, even persona analysis, to make sure that the persona that they think that they're speaking to and that is, you know, the right customer, you know, for their brand or product actually is reflected in the traffic that they're already receiving or the attention that they're getting, you know, making sure there's a good one-for-one relationship there. So I see like a research project as being the entry point. So I like to dig into that research first, present those findings as the foundation for the rest of the relationship and really where we take it from there. And, you know, the next steps after the research foundation is established is, you know, do we meet one-on-one and I leave you takeaways to go work on your own? And then I'm there somewhat as an accountability coach to make sure that you're doing what you should be doing to build the momentum, or is it more of a consultative relationship where I'm working with you hand in hand and we're building out the strategy together? I'm doing a little bit of execution, or I'm bringing in people that I trust as content creators to do that execution. So I think it really starts with research and diving in deep to figure out, okay, here's the competitive landscape. Here are the content opportunities. Here's what your persona is. And here's, you know, the mediums that make the most sense from a content perspective to use to reach that persona. If your target customer is, you know, 50 to 60 year old male, then TikTok doesn't make much sense. It's kind of pinning down, you know, those relationships as well and figuring out the mediums that are right.
Yeah, that's so important to keep focused on that persona. It's so easy to write content you think is valuable, but then have no one actually listen. How do you start with, if we dig into one or two of those, like with competitive analysis, what are you looking for? So they'd give you their competitors. Would you see, where do you start with that?
I love to use tools like Ahrefs and SimilarWeb to dig in and see, okay, what are the keywords that this competitor is ranking for? What's the their content strategy? Is it discernible? Have they really built out a content engine? You know, are they publishing consistently? Or are they doing podcasts consistently? Are they leaning into video? Where is most of their attention likely coming from and why? You know, what's their approach and what's been successful? And how can that be not only replicated to some extent? If something's going well, you would obviously want to take advantage of that and replicate it, but also what gaps are they leaving on the table? You know, what about the subject that they're covering that you're also covering, are they missing? You know, really, what can I take advantage of? What can my client take advantage of to dig into and address those gaps and in doing so, grab some attention that their competitor is not getting? So I think Ahrefs is a big tool from a content perspective, just purely to see landing pages, keywords, things of that nature. You know, SimilarWeb gives a good idea of traffic base and who that traffic base is. And I think it's interesting to see, you know, what the gaps are there and if the persona and the average customer or reader of the competitor's content is different from your own. You know, what does that say? And what are some opportunities there? You know, if your competitor's running ads, what are those ads looking? How are they addressing those? And what's the strategy? I think all those things say a lot and tell a lot about how to trigger the initial strategy, kind of given low-hanging fruit opportunities, but also what some longer play opportunities are. Like, for example, if a competitor is ranking for a keyword, but they haven't really done much with that, they haven't updated an article, it's been sitting there for 3 or 4 years, what can we do? What could we write that's better than that ultimately could dethrone that article in, you know, 4 to 6 months with the proper strategy?
I think that's a really important point, looking specifically at the keywords they rank for and if they are kind of slacking there. I like the low-hanging fruit as well. It's something, it's like a real benefit to not be leading the way in your industry. You can, especially as a small player, if you're coming up against big ones, you can assume that they have a big content team and that you can kind of copy their research and leverage it.
You know? Yeah, they've done, and you know, kind of ironically, they've done a lot of work for you. And companies with 3, 4, 5 full-time content producers, that's fine. They're churning out a high volume, but it doesn't necessarily mean that high volume is impactful, you know, and they may be leaving opportunities on the table that they don't even realize they're leaving because the goal has been more so on volume than on precision. So I think those are two different things.
Yeah, that's good. Like just identifying weaknesses and you going there first.
Right.
That's smart. I read a really good blog the other day by the Animals team. I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
It just seemed to write the best content. But one of their blog posts was about, can you actually get value from that first piece of content? And can you convert from it? Or as everyone says, SEO is a long-term play and like content is a long-term play. What's your view on that? How frequently do you need to write content before you, and how long do you need to invest before you can see results?
Yeah, those are great questions. I think that the first piece, you know, it really depends on your point of view. There's two schools of thought on this. One is you just need to get started. Like ultimately, you just need to get that first piece out there and really not lean on it too much or worry about it too much. You just need to get in the pattern of creation and get something published. Obviously, why not take advantage of the gaps that your competition is providing and create as much value as possible? You know, but if it's a standard blog post, if it's 1500 words, 2000 words, you know, it may not drive a whole lot of value for you from a conversion perspective just yet. The other school of thought is, you know, the first post you should ever deliver should be this 10, you hear about 10X all the time. You should do something that's 10 times more in depth than, you know, the post that's number one in the Google SERPs. Take it and just do something that's 10 times better and wait to publish until that's done. Like Brian Dean from Backlinko does, that's all he does. He posts like one article a month that's 15 to 20,000 words long, where it's 10 times more in depth than anybody else that's writing on SEO. And he swears by that. You know, there's a couple of different schools of thought there. I think ultimately it's what's right for the time that my client has realistically. You know, if they're doing the content themselves, if someone else is the creator, a lot of it comes down to that. But, you know, ultimately, it's just about getting started, because it's real easy with content strategy and thinking about that to get into analysis paralysis, where you're overthinking or just, you know, beating an idea to death without ever really getting going, getting started. And ultimately, once you get started, how people react to your content will tell you a lot. And that's how you frame the rest of your strategy. So I lean more toward, let's just get something up there. Let's not worry if it's driving us leads immediately or traffic immediately, but it's just a way to dig in and understand what the reality of the production process is going to look like and the time that it's going to take to be consistent.
Definitely. I think I do. I definitely agree with that. I get people asking me about like, how can I start a podcast? And I'm honestly like, just do it. I just pick something and try because you're pivoting or changing anyway.
Absolutely.
What do you get people to do as their first article? Would you just pick one of these keywords that is maybe a weak point? Would it be SEO focused or would it be like value focused, but forgetting about SEO?
Yeah, I think it depends on whether they've created any content in the past or not. Ultimately, if you've got somebody that has flirted with blogging a little and maybe they tried to do some SEO focused content just based on their own research and they've got, you know, 10, 15 articles up there that they've tried over, you know, 6-9 month period and, you know, maybe those have driven a little bit of traffic, then that's fine. And they've got a little bit standing up so you can see what worked well there and who read that. And that first article could be more SEO driven. And maybe take advantage of an opportunity of a keyword that they're outside of the top 100 for, but that's doing okay for them. And maybe that aligns with something that the competitor is struggling with. And yeah, maybe that first piece is SEO driven. But if they've never created any content at all, you've got to tell your story first, I think. So if you don't have, if you have an About Us page that's up there and is a little bit of a shell and tells some bits and pieces about your company or who you are as a solopreneur, that I think are really in-depth, here's what we believe, here's who we are type blog posts, even though it's not going to be a conversion piece, is essential. Because if you're going to LinkedIn and you're digging in there, you're digging in on another social medium, you want to be able to link people to that easily and show them quickly who you are, where they can have a 30-second read, a minute-long read to get an idea of what your business does. So you build trust right off. Because as much of content creation strategy is about lead generation, it's more so about building trust and controlling the narrative of your brand. So yeah, I think it depends a little bit on how much has been created before and if that story is established, if that brand voice is established and is forward and is present. I think a lot of that will helps to determine what that first piece should look like. Whether it's written or it's a video or it's a podcast or something like that, the process and the mindset's similar.
Definitely. I think in that Animals article about what should be your first post, they say one of the options is exactly that. Tell your philosophy.
Yeah, you have to. If that's not there, then you can write all day long. It's not gonna make much difference if people don't know what you stand for and what you're about.
Would you put that in the About Us page or would you stick that in the blog?
Yeah, I think either or is fine. And, you know, you could have one reinforce the other. If you wanted the About Us page to be more about individual team members, that's great. And then doing something like our story or my story, if you're a solopreneur, you could do a page with that. Or you could just do, you know, a really in-depth blog post that goes into even greater detail. I think, you know, one can support the other. It just depends on structure and the flow of your individual sites.
Definitely. That makes sense. Cool. Do you, I guess like SEO, it's a good thing. It's like one of those long-term plays, like you said, that can be an asset to generate leads. And over time, it gets easier. With all the content that you recommend creating, would you have some kind of like lead capture there or like a conversion or like a content upgrade type thing to find out?
Yeah, I think it's always a good idea to have a white paper or a lead magnet type article that really is the heartbeat of your business and, you know, talks about your unique value proposition and really what you provide customers or what your brand does or what your product is about and who it's intended for. That's great. And you certainly want to have that ability to build your email list and use those tools as leverage for that. I think that's very valuable. You know, one piece of strategy that I tend to work with a little bit later in process is to actually drive a Facebook ad directly to a top of funnel piece, like an awareness piece that's performing well, and then having that lead magnet or that email collector be very visible on that page, because it's a way basically of helping people move from reading an article that's intended for awareness or a high level interest into becoming a part of your email audience where you can market to them, not only content, but, you know, put them into a drip or something like that to push them in the direction that you desire for lead generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it works both ways. I think as you're starting out creating content, like having pop-ups or slide-ins or anything like that. A little bit more aggressive is probably a bad idea because you don't want to turn away at people that are part of a smaller audience. I think you can afford to take that risk when you have a larger audience that's more established and you've gotten, you know, a set click-through rate or a set conversion rate from your other elements. You can afford to be a little bit more aggressive with those types of UX pieces. But yeah, I think having an email pop up and having a, you know, a magnet, it's a good idea. It's standard marketing practice, so no reason to reinvent the wheel, you know.
What kind of things would you put in a lead magnet? I think you mentioned there, like putting an about our product and stuff. Do you think that is that a good lead magnet?
I like that. And I think something that really speaks to unique value proposition is good. I think a how-to or like a list type article that can be easily created, or, you know, an ebook that can be easily created of, you know, how to, you know, go through this specific situation. You know, we'll give that to you in return for your email address. And it shows when you can build something that's a how-to and is a walkthrough of a specific scenario, it definitely shows to your audience that you've got the chops, that you understand, you know, your world and how to walk them through that world and face the common challenges that they're looking to have addressed. So I think to or something that's really like a UVP, that's a unique value proposition and explains the true impact of your product or your brand. I think either is a...
Okay, yeah. So it could be, so it's like how to do a specific situation and it conveys your value. And I think that as a solo entrepreneur, that can make sense. I think like having, if you're a consultant for a certain thing, just teaching them something specific.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have a, you know, one client that works as, you know, an entrepreneur for like a financial advisor for other solopreneurs. And, you know, I think in like innovation, it's really good to put that out there to basically say, here's how I help people like me. Like I'm a solopreneur. Here's how I help people establish their financial footing and get comfortable. And this I've done for myself. So you can, you know, if you can speak from experience and something like that, it shows right off that you can walk the walk and you're not just talking about it. So.
Would you recommend the same for SaaS companies to do something like that, like Solve, but not including their product or directly selling their product?
Yes, for SaaS, it's interesting. And a lot of what I've seen be successful and a lot of what we did when I was at projectmanager.com on the white paper side of things were more like data-driven case studies and things of that nature. We did a paid time off study back in 2018 where we surveyed hundreds of project managers in different industries and figured out like what their paid time off situation was. Did they use all of it? If not, why not? You know, what was the baseline? How did it differ by countries? How did it differ by experience level? How did it differ by salary levels? And that type of really data-driven stuff was interesting for that industry because project managers are already really data-driven and numbers-driven and process-driven people anyway. So, you know, something that had that bone to it made a lot of sense. So I think for a SaaS company, something that is numbers driven, you know, kind of showing the proof and the results can be really impactful, especially if you can show how your product has made a difference in that industry. Not necessarily a case study, but more of a white paper that's data driven and showing, you know, the effect that your product has on a certain subset. Can be really valuable.
Yeah, if you have that data as well. I think people do seem to love like survey results, especially if they can fill them in and see their benchmark against other people.
Absolutely. We really saw that and it got a really interesting response. It ranked really well for paid time off and we got people saying, you know, coming to us and commenting and trialing out the software because, you know, they were already in the industry and it caught their eyes. They kind of saw where they were against their peers. Some happy about it, some not. So it was an interesting experience to put that together.
So that specific example, was it something that the product solved itself? Like they were like, okay, clearly we're not as good, so we should use the product. Or was it just interesting?
It was just the interest level and just the way that we tied it in. There is like capacity and time management capabilities within the software. So kind of to an ancillary degree, it was there. It was really just more a curiosity piece. Yeah. It got people interested in how we gathered the data and who we were to, you know, want to learn more, find out more.
Definitely. Cool. Next question, I guess then, were the leads that were generated from that actually high value or did they take a lot of time to nurture into the ones that...
Yeah, I think, you know, they needed some nurturing for sure. That keyword is not exactly a project management keyword with like high intent, right? Like it's a little bit different animal. the fruit in that world are the really high intent keywords where someone's searching for software specifically, or they're looking to, for an alternative to a competitor. And we had like competitor pages standing up for that, where we were directly comparing ourselves against a competitor to make that for somebody. If they search like project manager versus Asana, you know, we would pop up for that. They could see a side-by-side comparison. So like comparison pages were really effective for that. You know, case studies were really effective. This is a little bit more of kind of a side door, I guess, where we were grabbing people's attention because we knew they were project managers, and the survey company that we worked with, you know, helped us establish that and make sure that the survey was getting in front of the right people. But I don't know that those were necessarily high intent leads, as they were people that became interested in what we offered because of the data that we were providing, and they required more nurturing from the sales team and marketing.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Okay, so how much like guest blogging, how much would you say that should be part of people's strategy?
Yeah, I'm a big believer. You know, and I talked about that 120-day strategy, and I think guest blogging is half of that 120 days in terms of importance. Personally, I write 4 to 5 guest blogs a month myself on, you know, content strategy, content marketing, LinkedIn marketing, things of that nature. And been doing that a lot in the past, and more so recently for my personal website. My domain authority has increased pretty dramatically in the last 5 months from doing that, because you get those backlinks back from high domain authority sites that are do follow links. So they're passing their authority to you. Those links you develop, you get more organically over time because people link out to those articles. So I'm a big believer in it. And that 120-day strategy, I think, you know, the first 30 days, you're writing a handful of posts on your own blog. Then for 60 days, you're turning away and really not paying much attention to those because they're going to need time to grow anyway. And you're digging into acquiring guest blogs and really aggressively getting as many written as you can. And then, you know, like day 90 to 120, you're coming back and thinking about a hybrid strategy and how can I create some blog content every week, but still, you know, make sure that I'm getting a few guest blogs out there every month, whether I'm writing them myself or I'm bringing on a trusted freelancer that can ghostwrite for me and write my voice. Because I think that constant flow of backlinks coming in, even though, you know, it's a lot of work that goes into it, it's worth it. Because that constant flow of backlinks coming in from other sites that have a high authority just passes that authority to you. The more often that happens, a great signal to Google that your site should be considered authoritative in the niche, and you're going to rank better. Just because you're more competitive. So I'm a big believer in guest blogging.
Ultimately, what would be your frequency of guest blogging that you should aim for?
Yeah, I think it depends on the time you've got. You know, there are pro bloggers out there. There are guys like Adam Onfroy and Ryan Robinson are follows for people that have built an entire business in this, where they would argue literally as many as you can create. Now, for a solopreneur or, you know, for a business owner that's just new to content strategy, you need to be realistic. But I would think at least a couple a month is worth it, because they're not all going to publish at the same time. They'll be staggered. Everybody's publishing schedule is a little bit different. So if you're doing 2 a month, you may not get those links immediately, but those links could all come together 2-3 months down the road, where 4 or 5 are published that you published, you know, that you wrote 4 months ago, and all of a sudden some momentum really builds. But as long as you're doing that, you kind of get that little stream that can turn into a river in time as more and more out there being reviewed and being published.
Would you ever recommend going for the paid guest blogs? Because, you know, you can pay like $50, write a really terrible blog and just get the link. What's your view on that?
I would never do it personally. I think just on its surface, paying to write for somebody else doesn't make much sense. There are too many opportunities out there. With some digging and with the right strategy, there's absolutely no reason to pay somebody. I understand why sites do it from their end. It's an easy kind of secondary or third tier way to monetize what they've gotten standing up through their hard work. So I definitely understand why they propose that. But I think it's kind of preying on people's lack of understanding to some extent, which I think is a little predatory. So I think there's a lot of ways to acquire those blogs and write for some really high level sites without ever having to pay. It's not something people should do, even if you're getting started. Just start smaller. Instead, you know, it's just about process.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I can see the reasoning behind why people do it is a quick and easy way, but it's not necessarily building your authority as a guest blogger.
Yeah, because it just think of, yeah, why those sites are having you pay. Why, you know, I mean, what does that say about the quality of the site? I don't know. That's just my opinion. Yeah. I don't want to, you know, stick on that too much, but it just comes off a little fishy to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think I also get two or three emails a week saying, we're just launching a new award for £3,000. You can.
Yeah, there's a ton of those out there too. Congratulations. We're gonna recognize you as one of the best companies in this industry, as long as you pay us to bump you up on our list. There's companies that have made entire business models off of that. And I, you know, which is mind-boggling to me, but it must work to some extent, or they wouldn't be doing it. So
I'm not sure I trust awards anymore. I think writing content is all very well, but there's the other side of that, which is like the distributing and getting people to read it. We've talked about LinkedIn, but is there any other methods that you use?
Yeah, you know, I do LinkedIn for that purpose. I think social media is fine, you know, it's well and good, and obviously something, you know, that you want to take advantage of, but I have a little bit different perspective on it. If you think about the 120-day strategy, it's fine to grab the accounts that you feel like you're going to use and the mediums that you want to dig into, but really sharing a whole lot on those in that first 120 days doesn't make a lot of sense because you don't really know who your audience is yet. I'm more in favor of taking that 4 months to figure out if your persona is correct and those are who your readers are. And then you lean in and maybe you actually buy some likes or you boost some posts on Facebook, for example, or Instagram directly at demographic to, you know, run it as a test, kind of a validation to make sure that you're correct. And then once you know that, you can build in, you know, some paid spend on those mediums to really, you know, as a distribution element. You know, I think that's important. You know, there's plenty of sites out there now where you submit content and, you know, kind of have that grow for you within the platform. Like Growth Hackers is pretty nice to go in and article, and people upvote or downvote that, and you can get some good attention from that. It's a good means of distribution. You know, I think, you know, whatever, if you're looking at LinkedIn, doing that passively is good. It's a solid way to distribute and get some attention. I think repurposing is big, and it's a good way to turn, you know, one piece of content into multiple pieces. If you've written a big blog post, why not shoot some quick videos to repurpose that and distribute that content and market it on several different planes and different mediums? You know, taking an infographic out of an article if it's how-to driven, you know, pulling out 5-10 bullet points are really solid, making an infographic out of that and marketing that infographic to sites that could use it to augment content they've created in your niche is another great way to get some traffic back. So there's a lot of things you can do as you're getting your feet on the ground, not that heavy of a lift, and then your content's really rolling and you figure out the right mediums based on your persona, then you dig in and really further flesh out the velocity and I think the, you know, kind of the quality, the quantity of the content that you're producing for social and how that ties into your overall content marketing strategy. But I think it's step by step. It depends on where you are in your creation.
That's really good advice. I think the one thing I hadn't considered before is like creating an infographic and sending that to other people to improve their content as well. It's a good way to get a link.
Yeah. Yeah. You just ask for do follow back, you know, in return for providing that. And then there's the other traditional means of link building with broken links and anchor text and things of that nature that you can approach if you have the bandwidth that work to build domain authority in the same way that guest blogging does. It just really depends on where you are and what you want to focus on.
Definitely cool. Well, Chris, this has been amazing. It's given me so much to think about. And I think everyone listening as well will have got a really clear strategy from this. Just before we go off, is there anything you want to say? Anything else that you think we should know or anything about yourself that you want to say?
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Just in terms of where you can find me and what I do, a few things. My website's chrishughes.com. So it's chrishughes.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, /Chris Hughes. That's where I spend the majority of my time on social. Starting to build out some content for YouTube as well. But I primarily work with solopreneurs and small business owners, either one-on-one or in a consultative capacity to help them build trust in their brands and lower customer acquisition costs and increase simplicity through content strategy. If anybody finds themselves in those worlds, I would be happy to have a conversation about how I can help.
Perfect. Cool. Thank you.